Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 12th. I'm Nathan Wise reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, end in sight for Fish Creek Project, Southern Humboldt Community Baby Showers this Saturday, and the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. A Caltrans project to aid fish passage along the Avenue of the Giants is long overdue, impacting residents, tourists, and businesses along the scenic roadway. Lisa Music takes a look at the Fish Forward project and the hurdles left to clear for Fish Creek.
For fish's sake, the Avenue of the Giants remains closed to traffic due to delayed construction aimed to improve salmonoid passage in Fish Creek north of Phillipsville. The Fish Creek project began during the summer last year and was originally slated to be completed in September of that year. However, supply chain issues and weather delays have led to the closure of Highway 254 for nearly a year, an inconvenience for residents and tourists, and a loss of business for those on the south end of the avenue. KMUD News spoke with Miles Cochran, Public Information Officer for Caltrans District 1, last fall when hopes of a fall completion were still high.
We're talking about the Fish Creek project along beautiful Route 254 between Phillipsville and Miranda, an area known as Avenue of the Giants with incredible forest views. And what we are doing is removing a culvert there and replacing it with a bridge, which is going to help the fish. That's actually going to eliminate a significant barrier for fish. This project is a significant one because at this location, it was identified as one of the most important places in Northern California to remove barriers for fish. And so this new project is pretty wonderful, actually. It's going to add over 2 miles of habitat for fish, which is just incredible. You know, it's a beautiful spot there in Avenue of the Giants. It's near the Eel River. It's a big tourist destination. We definitely want our wildlife to do well there. And, you know, moving this project forward, it required a lot of collaboration. You know, it's within a state park and there's old growth redwoods there. And, you know, it takes a lot of planning whenever you have those elements involved. And the community was actually pretty, really supportive as well. And we just want to thank everybody for their support so that we could do this for the fish. You know, the community, the residents, the nearby businesses, we thank them for their patience because these are really vital improvements and it's wonderful for our Humboldt community.
The box culvert, originally built in 1919, was removed as it was enabling sediment buildup and impeding fish passage, two critical issues impacting the ecological health of the South Fork Eel River tributary.
I mean, it was one of Caltrans District 1's top fish passage priorities since 2005, so being able to do that project has been wonderful.
To delve deeper into the need for this project and the health of Fish Creek, KMUD News sat down with fish biologist and managing director of the Eel River Recovery Project, Pat Higgins, who has studied the three creeks north of the south entrance to the Avenue of the Giants.
All three have too much sediment being transported. The terrain is extremely steep in their headwaters, and I suspect that some patterns of disturbance, likely roads, and then the roads on the wrong night fail, and then a whole bunch of sediment comes down. And so then you can have a little box culvert that's working fine for Fish Creek, and the next thing you know, it's stuffed and it's blowing over the road. A couple things going on there. Too much dirt. And any civilization that blows dirt out the tailpipes does not endure. The other thing that happens if you have high road densities or a lot of compacted area from tractors or a lot of gullies on the hill slopes and grasslands, you're going to get all your water all at once. It's going to rain really hard. And now we know it rains harder than it used to. And we can look forward to crazy numbers like we've been seeing on the East Coast of like 12 inches in a few hours. That it's hard to prepare for that. But right now what we have with Fish Creek is the bridge that used to be big enough to pass the sediment and the water is no longer big enough, so they have to increase the size of the culvert and the bridge in order to accommodate the new flow and sediment that in combination really present a major flood risk. When you have 2 or 3 feet of the bed in Fish Creek that's mobile, as well as, you know, 10 or 15 feet of water on top of it, there's no place for the water to go. So it jumps out, floods the channels, blows over the road. That's kind of my understanding of how those systems are working and why such a change in culvert size might be necessitated.
Quenching rain of winter when mixed with soil erosion leads to sediment and an unhealthy environment for fish reproduction.
So the salmon and steelhead, lamprey eels, a lot of the critters in the eel, they were tuned to clean creeks. So they come in and, you know, why are they taking all the trouble to bury their eggs in the gravel? I mean, that's a crazy life history. It's because the eggs are sushi and everything wants to eat them. So they bury them in the gravel, which for a time immemorial was a good strategy. I mean, they proliferated. They were the most abundant, you know, the eel ranked with the top rivers in the world. But if you have sediment, then the sediment, when the water comes up and it's brown, it's got suspended sediment. And the salmon build their nest so that it sucks that water down into a nest. And so you're sucking fine sediment down into the nest. It can coat the eggs. It can clog the interstitial pores in the creek, cause the eggs to suffocate. What used to be pretty rock solid in terms of like a strategy for the fish to spawn, and now it's a crapshoot in some tributaries.
Though Caltrans's Fish Creek project will be beneficial to the health of the tributary, Higgins says it is not a fix-all, with Eel River fish species ignoring it until the sediment equilibrium and a healthy ecosystem can be achieved.
So when fish come up to Fish Creek, and it wasn't named Fish Creek because of salamanders, more than likely, on most days, they're going, no, I don't want to go in here. Salmon Creek, unfortunately, is in a similar or even greater state of disequilibrium with huge amounts of sediment coming out. And you can see this by the mouth. If you go to the tributary mouths like Oman or Fish, you'll see they're spread out all over the place. And then they dump all this gravel. And then what happens in late summer? Oh, the creek disappears there. Not necessarily because there's no water, although stressed watershed conditions with the road densities and like that, and forests that are too dense, they're not going to give you the same amount of water in summer. But whatever water is there will slip into those deltas, and then you have to dig for it.
In the process of helping fish passage, residents and tourists have had to detour on Highway 101 to access parts of the Avenue of the Giants. Residents north of Phillipsville must take a long detour to reach their post office that lies on the other side of the closure. Tourists heading north, wanting to travel the famous avenue through the towering redwoods, now must access the avenue just south of Miranda before heading north, cutting off the southern portion of the trip. The detour has impacted business for the Chimney Tree, a small burger stand near the south entrance of the Avenue of the Giants. Chimney Tree manager Milo Jimenez said,
"We have a really slow season last year and also this year."
The seasonal restaurant is typically open from April through October. Construction began last summer during the business's busiest time when tourists take in the sights along the avenue, leading to a slow season. Now, as the business opens again, they are faced with the ongoing impacts from the delayed completion of the Fish Creek project.
"I've been waiting for a long time to they can be done."
Cochrane is well aware of the sacrifices residents and businesses have made as construction impedes normal flow, as the benefits to the fish species of the eel are prioritized.
"Really do appreciate the patience that everyone has had to put into using that detour on 101 going around the closure of that Fish Creek Bridge. And really that project, it exists solely for the fish."
Though roads are beneficial to human connectivity and the completion of this project is eagerly awaited, they can be detrimental to fish. In the Fish Creek project, Caltrans is trying to improve fish passage while maintaining critical transportation infrastructure. Roads that are not managed properly can contribute to increased sediment and poor creek health. Higgins encouraged private property owners to help their local waterways by being good land stewards, with road management being a great way to invest in local river health.
But, you know, the original design for many roads was for logging, and they were not meant to be permanent. So now, yeah, need to outslope roads so that the water comes off the road and goes back in the hill slope. The longer your inboard ditch is, the higher the peak discharge is going to be coming out of the culvert, and the more likelihood you're going to blow a hole in the hill somewhere. So you want your roads, and it costs more to kind of re-engineer your road to where it doesn't have the problems of the inboard ditches, but then your maintenance is a lot less. You may only have to go in there every 5 years. So to get the online, you can get the Pacific Watershed Associates Forest and Ranch Road Handbook. And it's beautifully illustrated and it's easy to read if you have interest. And everybody should be a student of roads.
Fish Creek, unfortunately, is not the only creek in the Eel River watershed in need of help. Though substantial restoration work has happened south of the Humboldt-Mendocino County line, several creeks north of the county line are not ecologically functional, Higgins claimed.
Unfortunately, you don't have good ecological health, and most of the creeks in that reach. Sproul still has ecological function. Redwood Creek has patches of ecological function, and it's a lot of effort in restoring Redwood Creek. But a lot of these other watersheds, we haven't paid enough attention to them, and they have significant problems. And then it poses a challenge in restoration. Because if you're going to restore things, the first thing you have to do is go get those creeks that still have some function. And if they still have some function and they're right next to other creeks that are like refugia, that are source populations, then that's where you need to restore.
Though with good land stewardship and a collaborative effort between private and public land management, hope is not lost for Fish Creek or those like it.
Time heals all wounds, they say. Not all. But then, you know, then the fish will show you, and they'll swim up there when things have resorted. It's quite possible that there are tributaries to Fish Creek that are still fully functional. There may be patches of headwater streams or benches up in there, and some landowners are better than others, or some, you know, past logging has been less active. And so if there's functional patches, they'll find them. And it's possible that there's even like native trout up in there. So Fish Creek, it's impaired right now. It's got too much sediment for optimal salmon production. It goes away in the summer, so it doesn't have rearing habitat for the fish. And that is the dual problem of altered watershed hydrology and excess sediment. So it's going to take some work to get Fish Creek back to where it's you know, lives up to its name.
And Mother Nature should never be counted out.
I guess I would say that every time I underestimate the resilience of nature, I generally am humbled, and that these watersheds, kind of in their equilibrium, are inclined to produce lots of fish.
As Caltrans works to improve access for both the fish and people, a mid-construction discovery of another impacted species altered Caltrans's construction plan and further delays.
Absolutely. So the initial design of that project, and I'm so glad that they caught this, but the initial design did not take into the account the redwood root systems at three of the four corners. For, you know, the bridge abutment wing walls. And so they caught it before we started working on it. And I'm glad that they did, because we highly value our natural resources and our redwoods. And so the delay is related to protecting redwood root systems, and the change was made due to protect redwood root systems.
Cochrane shared in an interview with KMUD today that he feels confident in saying that the avenue will be open for traffic by mid-June. Until then, those wanting to patronize the Chimney Tree can take the Hooker Creek exit and stop by the charming roadside restaurant Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. For KMUD News, I'm Lisa Music.
Soham Health's Family Resource Center is having a community baby shower. Lauren Schmidt shares the details.
This Saturday, April 13th, the Southern Humboldt Family Resource Center invites expecting parents, parents of children aged 0 to 2, and those contemplating pregnancy and their support networks to a free community baby shower, where local families can receive valuable insight from a range of experts, including doulas, healthcare providers, and support groups.
I'm Amy Tironis. I'm the coordinator for the Family Resource Center in Redway. We're located at the Redway Elementary School. It will take place at the community park from 12 to 3. We're inviting anybody who is expecting, planning to become pregnant, or parenting up to 2 years to come and join us. It's a free event. There'll be food, raffle prizes, and lots of giveaways. We're really looking forward to our event. The best part is really just getting to network with other parents and families and a lot of service providers that provide services for anything between perinatal, prenatal, and 0 to 2 year olds will be there to offer support, information, and guidance.
Despite our remote and rural location, Southern Humboldt is rich with a supportive network of prenatal and perinatal health experts, all dedicated to assisting local families.
Oftentimes in our area, there are services that come and go quite often, and we don't always know just, you know, magically what's available for us. Oftentimes there may be a rumor or a perception that there's not a lot of services in Southern Humboldt, but we actually have more than you would imagine. And so there's a lot of information to be had. There's a lot of services and providers that will come from out of the area to meet with our Southern Humboldt families. But we have just a wealth of information and knowledge here in Southern Humboldt that I think it's really important to share. And oftentimes when we think about parenting, I think it's the toughest job that we can ask of anybody. And so if we don't have informal supports and allies, then it's going to be even tougher. So I think it is really important for families and parents to get to know each other and find allies and support within each other as well.
This is a rain or shine event and is just one of many supportive initiatives hosted by the Southern Humboldt Family Resource Center.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. It might be a little bit rainy. We are expecting a little drizzle, but I don't think it's anything that'll stop us here in Southern Humboldt. We're really looking forward to the gathering. It's always a really, really fun time. I just want to let folks know that they're welcome to bring family members, anybody that can help support them or that might be helpful to get information. If you are, maybe your due date is on the 13th and you're not ready to leave the house, you're more than welcome to send somebody to represent you. What we will be doing is putting all the information from all the service providers in a tote bag to go home. So again, if you have a family member or a friend who you would like to send in on your behalf, we'll send them home with all the information that you'll be getting and any resources that you might be needing.
Attendees can look forward to a fun-filled day with games, snacks, refreshments, and even a chance to win prizes and baby supplies.
Food, raffles, a lot of fun and games. But if you can imagine, it really is a health fair in the sense that health providers will be there. We have all sorts of local folks, midwives, doulas, pregnancy support folks, public health, Redwood Rural, Southern Humboldt Unified School District will also be there talking about preschool and early interventions. So just a lot of agencies and service providers, anything geared towards 0 to 2 or prenatal, perinatal health information will be there. We really are doing our best to support parents this spring. And so we're also doing a free parent support night. It's monthly this month in April. It's Friday, April 19th. That's a really informal night, 5 to 7 o'clock. We really just gather, have food, childcare available. For this event on the 19th, we'll be doing macrame plant hangers, and all the materials are provided for free as well. And then the other thing I want to shout out is we do a monthly parenting support group for parents and caretakers of individuals with developmental disabilities. And that happens April 16th. It's our third Tuesday of the month, and it happens every single month. So if any of those opportunities sound like something you might be more interested in or want more information, give us a call at the Family Resource Center at 923-1147.
For more information, you can visit sohumhealth.org.
Ray Hamill brings us details of all the week's big local sports stories, including all the latest high school and college baseball and softball news, as well as how one HDNL player was named a state player of the year this week in this report.
An HDNL junior has been named a state basketball player of the year. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment, and we'll also be looking at all of the other big local sports stories this week, including all the latest high school and college baseball and softball, how one local high school is setting the standard when it comes to sportsmanship, news of a local club team making some noise at the College Disc Golf National Championships, news of another big week for Arcata Tennis, and news of an historic achievement for a talented College of the Redwoods athlete. But first up, St. Bernard's junior Layla Florvillis has been named the CalHighSports.com Division 4 Girls Basketball Player of the Year after leading the Crusaders to an historic state championship last month. Florvillis is just the second ever HDNL girl to be named a state player of the year, following in the footsteps of McKinleyville's Trina McCartney, who received the accolade back in 1987. The talented junior guard played a huge role in leading the Crusaders to the league's first ever state championship in the sport, Boys or Girls, in Sacramento last month. The SB girls defeated Grossmont out of San Diego County 47-29 in the Division 4 state final after a thrilling come-from-behind win over Arcata in the NorCal championship game. Florvillis, who reached the 1,000 career points milestone earlier this year, averaged 19.3 points a game this past season. The prestigious award comes just a few weeks after her head coach, Matt Tomlin, was named the CalHighSports.com Division 4 Girls Coach of the Year. In local high school baseball, meanwhile, the South Fork Cubs got their first conference wins of the season last weekend after sweeping a Little Four doubleheader at Hoopa. The South Fork boys won the opener 4-1 and took game 2 13-1 in 5 innings. With the two victories, they improved to 2-4 in the Little Four and kept their slim championship hopes alive. The South Fork girls also traveled to Hoopa for a conference softball doubleheader and split with the Warriors. After dropping game 1 10-8, the Cubs responded well with an 8-3 win in game 2, earning a second conference doubleheader split in 5 days after also splitting with Ferndale earlier in the week. The South Fork girls are now 2-4 in the Little Four. It was a relatively quiet week for both the Little Four and Big Five in baseball and softball, with just a few games scheduled. The South Fork Cubs did travel to McKinleyville for a non-league baseball game on Wednesday, but struggled in a 10-0 loss in just 5 innings. With the loss, the Cubs dropped to 7-7 overall. Colby Stolpe hit a pair of home runs for the Panthers in the win as they continued their impressive spring. After taking 2 of 3 games from Eureka last week, the Panthers also won a makeup game against Fortuna on Thursday by a score of 13-2, and they are now 5-1 in the Big Five and in top spot in the conference standings. The Eureka boys bounced back from their series against McKinleyville to beat Arcata 2-1 on Wednesday in another makeup game, and they remain right on the Panthers' heels with a conference record of 4-2. In Little Four baseball last weekend, conference co-leaders Ferndale and St. Bernard's remained tied atop the standings after splitting a key doubleheader at St. Bernard's. The Crusaders took game 1 6-2 while handing the Wildcats their first loss of the season, but the Cats would bounce back to take game 2 10-4 to earn a split and leave both teams still deadlocked atop the standings halfway through conference play. If both schools continue to take care of business against South Fork and Hoopa, they will face off in a conference-deciding doubleheader at Ferndale in early May. In softball, it's shaping up to be an exciting race for the Big Five Championship, with three teams currently tied for the conference lead. After sweeping a doubleheader against Fortuna on Saturday, the Del Norte girls improved to 2-1 in conference play, and they have the same record as the Arcata girls, who had a bye last weekend. The McKinleyville girls also swept a weekend doubleheader against Eureka to go to 4-2 in the Big Five. In Mendocino County baseball, the Fort Bragg boys are enjoying a good spring. The Timberwolves did lose to St. Helena 6-2 on Tuesday, which ended an 8-game winning streak, but they are 9-2 in the season, including a 4-1 record in the North Central League One. In local college softball, the College of the Redwoods women split a doubleheader against Shasta last weekend, and they are now 6-6 in the Golden Valley Conference and 9-19 overall, while the Mendocino College women swept a doubleheader against Shasta before dropping two games against Siskiyous, and they are now 11-17 overall and second in the JVC with a conference record of 6-4. In college baseball, CR lost all three games against Lassen earlier this week and dropped to 9-15 overall and 2-15 in conference. Switching gears, the Ferndale Wildcats are setting a high standard when it comes to sportsmanship. The Cats recently received the HDNL Winter Season Sportsmanship Award for the second straight winter, and they became the first league school to win the award twice. The Sportsmanship Award is handed out to one of the league's 11 schools after each of the fall, winter, and spring seasons, and it is based on input from three different groups: officials, coaches, and school administrators. In local high school tennis, nobody can match the Arcata Tigers, who continue to dominate the sport here on the North Coast. After recently securing a 7th straight league championship with a perfect 14-0 record, the Tigers swept all 6 titles at last weekend's HDNL Singles Championships, which were held at Fortuna High School. Arcata's Luta Hall defeated Gene Quinn of North Coast Prep in straight sets in the number one singles final, and he will represent the league at next month's North Coast Section Singles Championships. In local disc golf, meanwhile, the Cal Poly Humboldt club team traveled to compete at the NCAA National Championships last week and placed 28 out of 80 teams in the Division II competition. Individually, Reuben Davis finished 6th overall out of 319 competitors in the singles competition and earned All-American honors. And finally this week, it was an historic week for CR's Alyssa McCovey, who became the first Corsairs athlete to qualify for the state heptathlon championships in 25 years, and she traveled to compete at Sacramento City College. We'll have more on how McCovey fared next week. And that's this week's Caymount News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In national news, Biden shores up Pacific alliances during trilateral summit with Filipino and Japanese leaders.
Biden gave the Japanese and Filipino leaders his assurances that the U.S. would stand with its allies in the face of China's increasing assertiveness in the region, and other security threats like the North Korean nuclear program are areas of mutual concern for the allies, he said.
I want to be clear. The United States defense commitments to Japan and to the Philippines are ironclad. They're ironclad. As I've said before, any attack on Philippine aircraft, vessels, or armed forces in the South China Sea would invoke our mutual defense treaty.
The U.S. and the Philippines have a mutual pact that's been in place for 70 years. There have been skirmishes between the Philippine and Chinese coast guards in the South China Sea in recent months over disputed areas. Chinese coast guard vessels have also approached Japanese vessels in the East China Sea near Taiwan. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said through an interpreter that the three allies are stronger when they face challenges together.
In the midst of compound crisis faced by the global community, multi-layered cooperation between allies and like-minded countries is essential if we are to maintain and bolster a free and open international order based on the rule of law.
However, the historic trilateral summit was not without its critics. A group of Filipino-American activists criticized the meeting. Zhang de la Cruz is with the activist group Bayon. He told a rally in D.C. against the summit that President Marcos's family have yet to fully account for the abuses of his father, Ferdinand Marcos Sr.'s dictatorship.
They continue to steal from the people and sell out the Philippines to imperialist powers just like his father. As survivors of martial law, we demand that the Marcos family pay for their crimes and the money be returned to the Filipino people for social services, education, housing, and health care.
President Marcos said during the meeting that better coordination between the three allies will create opportunities for investment, economic growth, and prosperity for all three countries.
This is a meeting that looks ahead. As we deepen our ties and enhance our coordination, we seek to identify ways of growing our economies and making them more resilient, climate-proofing our cities and our societies, sustaining our development progress, and forging a peaceful world for the next generation.
President Biden also announced that the three nations were launching a new economic corridor in the Philippines as part of the G7 Partnership for Global Infrastructure Investment that would help develop clean energy, port, agriculture, and other projects in the country. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Mayer, and thanks to our reporters, Lisa Music, Lauren Schmidt, Ray Hamill, and Max Pringle. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Nathan Wise.